And don't do it in a parking lot. We don't go to parking lot fires. Do it in a house, a building, 1, 2, 3-story drill tower, private dwelling with theatrical smoke, and do the gallons per second test where you can truly see what they can do under low visibility with furniture and crap moving around with the nozzle open flowing water. Is that a good enough answer?
Firehouse Vigilance presents the Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance. It is Weekly Scrap number 70. I am very excited this week. If you know me, you know I'm a huge fan of tonight's guest. It is none other than Kurt Isaacson. He is a battalion chief in Escambia County, Florida. He runs the best conferences in the country throughout the year, from Command Officer Boot Camp to HROC and everything in between. And he will straight up tell you that it is worth the risk. Chief Ike, it is my pleasure to have you today as the guest of Weekly Scrap number 70. Welcome, sir.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. I'm excited about it. You know, with the last year with COVID and everything else, I'm not a big Zoom guy or, you know, I've done a few podcasts with, you know, Fit to Fight Fire and Brothers in Battles and that. But, I literally, this might be less than a half a dozen times I've ever done something like this. But I was excited about this, you know, getting to talk with you when I was in Oklahoma. And then you came down for the 2 days commanding from the sidelines. And I just like the style, how you do it. I think it's pretty cool. And I'm looking forward to it. You know, if we go for 30 minutes, great. If we go for 3 hours, good. I have nowhere to be, nowhere to go. I'm in the cottage, so there's nobody bothering or disturbing me.
Well, you're getting them fired up already, so that's awesome, man. To everyone watching live, and there's already a bunch of people already showing up, if you have questions for Chief Isaacson or myself, do not hesitate to throw them at us in the comments, and I will get to them. And on the intro, I could have talked for probably 10 or 15 minutes on all that Chief Isaacson has done. So, but I tried to keep the intro really short and sweet and get to the meat. And so, Chief, is there anything you wanted to add to that?
No, we don't need all that fluff.
Okay, fair enough. So we'll get right into it. And like I said, the conferences, right out the gate, I'm going to hit you with HROC coming up next month. You just announced that you secured that Best Western on a few days ago. So talk to me about how that's shaping up to be. What might be one of the best HROCs ever?
No, this will be the best hands-on conferences we've ever done in 10 years. You know, Ray McCormick and I started 10 years ago with the first conference, Urban to Suburban Fire Tactics, and it's kind of evolved amongst the CFT team. But, you know, we've known about this Best Western, obviously, since September 16th when Hurricane Sally hit Pensacola Beach. But, you know, we couldn't let the cat out of the bag. If we mentioned it, it would be like false marketing, false advertisement if we didn't get it. But we did have it for the free Pensacola Beach Benefit Conference back in December. And I'll tell you what was cool about that is we tapped into it a little bit. Todd Edwards did a great job with the training groups that we had with forceful entry, stretching lines, some drop bars, search. We had Eric Allen with Fastboard. And I tell you, the whole time is – you know, I'm like a kid in a candy store. I'm just literally, I'm not teaching. I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting back at the CFT trailer and I'm checking it all out. I'm just watching what's going on, you know, how everything's evolving. I'm thinking, what would it be to have a building like this for a month or 2 months or 3 months? And, you know, we talked to Luke. He's the owner. And Todd's been, you know, great working with him, just trying to figure it out. And they've been awesome wanting us to have it. It really just comes down to money. You know, when the demolition crew and whatever it's been, 2, 3, 4 days ago, when we got the official word that we were going to have a 3-story multi-wing wraparound balcony on the Gulf of Mexico with a boardwalk system connected into it. That's literally a Red Ryder BB gun shot away from the ballroom at the Hilton. It's right next to the Hilton for anybody that's been on Pensacola Beach. The Hilton's where Ray always does the vertical hose stretch up like a 200-foot hose stretch. And this building's right next door to it. So logistically, it's like a dream come true. If we do anything half this cool, I'll be blown away. So we're working on it, supply list. I was on the phone yesterday, or day before yesterday, you know, last couple of days with Jim McCormick from FDTN, the ultimate, nobody's better. He is the man when it comes to hands-on training, whether it be, you know, his you know, Disney World for firefighters in Indianapolis or just acquired structures. and making sure I'm getting his input. So this is going to be a huge team effort. We have more instructors coming to this HROC / GFT Fire School because it's combined. HROC is normally in December. It's been postponed. And this is going to be the mecca of CFT hands-on training and conferences. And just, you know, it's the caveat, too, is so many people have been locked up since last February or March, and things are out. We're going to be over 400 firefighters. I know we're going to social distance for all you people freaked out there. But they do have this thing called herd immunity. Plus, they have vaccines. So just chill out. If you don't feel safe, keep your ass at the house. But we are the ones that want to come. We're going to train. We're going to force doors. We're going to stretch lines. We're going to do some searching. We're building some props. It's going to be neat. I was on the phone today with a few sponsorships on making sure we're trying to get some battery-operated saws, trying to get some gas-powered saws.
Nice.
So we're not going to cut any corners when it comes to, you know, doing stuff. There's no – you know, I'll tell you exactly what I've told multiple people. We do not have a budget in relation to buying materials because when this thing's over, I don't want to feel like we were trying to cut corners or anywhere. You know, I want it to be when it's over with, you know, that if we're having to fund this thing through other conferences, that's fine. But when it's over, I want to feel like it's for the student. And I'll tell you what I want. I want when the student leaves, I want them to feel like I felt 23 years ago or whatever it was. The first year I went to FDIC in Indianapolis and Bob Presser was the hands-on coordinator. And I was like, this is real fire training. And so, you know, I can't replicate that, but that's my goal.
Right.
My gold standard is I want to provide what I received the first time I went to FDIC and Bob Presser was running, you know, the hands-on stuff. And we're going to do everything we can. I think we're going to have over 50 instructors from Cody Trestrell and Rob Fisher and the Brothers in Battle from the Pacific Northwest to Clark Lamping and guys out of Las Vegas. You know, obviously Chief McGrail, I think's got, I don't know what he's got, nearly 20 people from Denver coming. It's going to be a pretty neat deal. It's going to, you know, and I'll tell you, when we're talking about CFT and County Fire Tactics conferences, I get a lot of phone calls, people wanting to do conferences. I don't care if 1,000 conferences pop up. It's not a competition. But I will tell you, I don't worry about what anybody and everybody else does with their conference. I know for me, Jessica and I want to provide the gold standard. And it's not about competition and it's not about profit margin. It's about when somebody leaves and if they paid out of their pocket and they gave up their time, meaning they were on annual leave,
right,
swaps. Like, you know, the city or county, the fire department did not pay for their conference, didn't give them time. They're away from their family. When they leave, I want them to feel like the investment was worth it. That's our number one thing. And if you haven't seen our little four-minute video that Brian Kerr did, the guy that made the brass tax videos, he did a little four-minute video for us. It says it all. We want you to get off an airplane. We want you to have a free ride. We don't want Uber. We want you to deliver to the front door to Hilton. We want the lowest price hotel rooms. We want you to get 10, 15, 20% off your food. We want drink specials. We just want it to be a full package deal, you know. There's limitations on everything.
Sure.
We can't do what Jim does at FDTN. We never will be. It's impossible to replicate the quality of hands-on training he does. But what we do is we do our thing where we're trying to provide quality lectures, you know, intellectual, formal, professional developmental seminars with a tad bit of hands-on. So when you go to Jim's place up there in Indianapolis, you're a little smarter, you know, brain-wise, you know, educational-wise, so then you can apply that blue-collar skill, which is what this job is. It's a blue-collar job.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All right, I'm going to catch you up, Chief. A lot of people fired up. Tank fired up more, said, fired up, let's go, glad to be here. A lot of hype. It's going to be a solid episode with one of the state's best in the biz. That's from Robert Ramirez saying, great job, brothers. Chief Ike, the man, from Kevin Morgan. And then I'm going to hit you with Brian Brush real quick because he came in and said, no better training, no better education, all because it is the best intent and the best environment. God bless you, Kurt, Jessica, and the entire CFT team. And so, yeah, a lot of praise there. And thank you, Scott Slocum. He linked the video in for the audience to see. So I got a first question for you from the audience. Are you ready for it, Chief?
Go ahead.
It said from Chad Otruba, Chief, How do you tackle when there's a disconnect between chief officers slash management and line firefighters, where operations feels like management isn't invested in their people?
Well, that, I mean, you know, I don't want to get off on a negative tangent, but the reality is, you know, the older I get, I guess the more experience and wiser I get, you know, and Bob Pressler used to say back in the day in FDNY, 12,000 people, he called it the 500 club. 500 out of 12,000 were in a job. You know, I personally, you know, I used to call it the 1% club. And Jessica's a positive thinker. She'd say, no, I'll call it, you know, it's the 5%. And I was talking to a big, you know, mentor of mine the other day, and he said, if we really want to be honest with ourselves, it's 1% of 1% that's into the job. Just everybody listening right now, think about the size of your job, whether it's 10 people in your department or 100 or 1,000. How many care about being on this podcast or listen to Fit to Fight Fire or any podcast, or they care about going to a conference? And, you know, that's just reality. But, I, you know, to try to answer the question, that's a hard question. But, you know, look at a fire department and find out their training budget. And I say this quite a bit when I just got a structure fire coming on my phone here. I had to look at it. So, the reality is, look at your training budget for a fire department. And if you have 100 people in your fire department, and your training budget's $10,000, divide that by 100 people. Yeah. That's how much they believe in training,
right?
Or don't believe in training.
Exactly.
That's, you know, and that's a sad thing. And, you know, reality is, you would think for a job that, you know, that is put on a pedestal, that comes not only for fires, but, you know, natural disasters, tornadoes, earthquakes, hurricanes. I deal with a lot of hurricanes, that you would think that fire departments would have $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 per employee. I hate to call us employees, but firefighters. So if you said $2,000 for a 100-man department, or, you know, fire person department, that's $200,000,
right?
You know, and that doesn't exist. I mean, it really is a problem. The problem too is we have people that are dying to be the fire chief so much that they'll bounce around all over the country and go from city to city to city, and, you know, they'll go big to small, small to big. And I truly support the National Fire Academy. I support the EFO, you know, but I only support it when it's a Brian Brush. You know, Brian Brush went and got his EFO at the National Fire Academy. But Brian Brush didn't get that before he had his college degree. He didn't get that before, you know, he was a firefighter and went through three different city fire department fire academies as a rookie school, and is into, you know, back to the basics and training and all that other key stuff. So it's putting the cart before the horse, you know, and I want to start rattling off some of Ray's stuff from his, you know, his keynote at FDIC, whatever, that's been 12 years ago. Some of the best quotes ever came out of his thing. But, you know, he came up with a thing before that thing called the GFO, the ghetto fire officer. The reality is, what we need in a fire service is ghetto fire officers. And I don't have an answer, but I can, you know, I tell you that when I travel the country, more times than not, when I meet a fire chief, a deputy chief, an assistant chief, hell, even battalion chiefs, they don't even know what a 30-inch crowbar is between a pinned hooligan tool. Yeah, I mean, yeah. They don't know the difference between a 7/8, a 15/16, a selecto gallonage, or a fixed gallonage nozzle. And that's sad, because that is the backbone of what we do. It's critical. And I don't understand how they can run a fire department if they don't know what their people need. You know, and I'll tell you this, I'm changing gears on my own focus, that if you're ate up and you're into this job, I'm going to just tell you, I was in denial about it. You're not going to find it in your fire department. If you're into this job and you're ate up, you got to, don't kill yourself, man. I've been doing it for nearly 30 years now. I've been on multiple paid fire departments, a lot of contract training. And you know what? My wife and I took a long walk today, and, you know, we were talking about what I do or don't do for my fire department, the 850. And I get frustrated, man, because I just, you know, I'll be straight up. I'll tell the whole world that's listening. If you work for Escambia County Fire Rescue, you get to go to CFT fire conferences for free. Free. It's in your backyard. So I want everybody listening to think about this. How many people on your department, your job, if you had HROC, CFT ODP with John Norman, Mike Turpak, Frank Mizguso, you know, you had water on the fire with, you know, Ray McCormick and UL and you know, Daryl Liggins and Brian Brush. And I mean, I could just keep going on the names. It goes on and on. And all they had to do was get up at their house and drive 20 minutes to it. How many would go and how many wouldn't go? Right. I can tell you on my job, I pulled out the rosters. 75% of my organization in 10 years has never stepped foot in the Pensacola Beach Hilton for a CFT conference. And I'm not knocking them down. I'm not being – and they're listening to me right now. They're secret people. I'm thinking about getting Patreon so they got to pay to listen to me so they don't – they can't gab out on me. But the reality is it's taken me years to not let it bother me because I give it to them for free. I just want them to get infected by listening, you know, to Chief Frank Mizguso. And I'll tell you a great example. One of my right-hand guys, Matt Scallon, been with us from day one, works on Ladder 12. His dad was one of my captains on Pensacola. That guy was a, you know what, I'm trying not to use four-letter words. His ass was bottomed out, and it was depressing me. Because, I mean, I get negative, too. When I talk on a dock, I'm coaching myself. I coach myself more than I coach anybody else when I talk, by the way.
Right on.
But he was bottomed out. He went to ODP. It wasn't me. And he listened to Mo Davis and Clyde Gordon and Todd Edwards and Frank Mizguso on Wednesday. And, man, he was on the top of the mountain. And he wrote an email and sent it out to our whole fire department because things are bad. Now, for all you listeners, I want you to get out your pen and paper, and I want you to write this down.
I have a pen.
Escambia County Fire Rescue starting fireman today makes $10.78 an hour. It's the same starting pay it was 20 years ago. Come to Escambia County Fire Rescue, and we'll pay you with fires. That's what we do. We pay you by going to fires. $10.78 an hour, and it's frustrating. But Matt went to this conference, hung out with another 150, give or take, people that are into the job from all over the country, Alaska, Hawaii, the Pacific Northwest, California. I mean, literally from all over the country. And he sends this phenomenal email to our whole organization, how excited he is. Then he steps up to the training division. And now for the last couple of days, this next 10 days, on his days off, he's helping with hands-on training at Acquired Structure. And that's what you got to do is, man, if you're into this job, you got to stay into it by hanging out with one percenters. You got to go to conferences. You got to get on podcasts. You've got to feed the desire. You've got to read the right books. And, tonight I got to tell you, anybody out there who's not read Report from Engine Company A2, you got to read it. And this book actually was given to me about 25 years ago from Pat Grace. One of my top mentors as a young fireman growing up. And, you know, I tell people all the time, man, that's a book you just got to read it. I mean, you just got to understand what was going on in the South Bronx and how the fire service, you know, evolved. But you've got to feed the desire. And, you know, like, you know, being on here just a minute ago, I got Jason Hovelman, Chief Hovelman, man, what a phenomenal leader, chief, texting me wanting to give money to help support supplies for the, you know, the Best Western training. And that's what you got to do. You got to network with people around the country. And I've said this in other podcasts. On Thanksgiving, Christmas, when a hurricane is coming, and it seems like we have a hurricane coming our way every year, I get more text from brothers on the job in Chicago, New York, Miami, the West Coast. I get more text from them in an hour within 72 hours than I do from anybody that lives around here. You know what I mean? Right. It's, you know, and it's not a bad thing. The reality is, you know, birds of a feather flock together. You look at FDIC groups, teams that date back to the 90s. They're not all from the same job. It was hard for me to understand in the 90s when I went to listen to signed up for Andy Frederick's class. The Engine Company Essentials class, when I went in the 90s at FDIC, and I was like, why didn't Andy Fredericks have like all FDNY firefighters? I mean, he had Mark Wesseldine and some other people, but I mean, he had guys like, you know, Vesling and people from all over the country that were a part of his team. There were other fire departments. It took me at least another decade to realize that it's not that he didn't have friends on the FDNY. He was picking a diverse group of people that were giving him diversity, but they were also into the job and ate up.
Right.
When he went to the firehouse, whether, you know, whatever what engine it was before squad in, you know, squad 18, 48, 45, you know, so many companies run together, is they were into the job, but they might not have been into it like him. And that's another thing, you know, the question I'm going back and I'm gonna cut this down for in about a minute here so you can ask another question, but is, you know, I really don't have an answer about the chief, the fire chief. Is, you know, I said in one podcast, and I it's easy to say it, and, you know, easier to say it than do it. Don't worry about them, man. Be into the job. Be the best you can be. And if you think you've outgrown your organization, hopefully you have an option to go to a different organization without having to start over pension-wise. And that's one thing that I really wish the American Fire Service has was, like the military, standardized pension. You know, I did 9 years in Pensacola. I was 1 year short of vested. I walked away, you know, to Scambia. If I want to leave, it's tough because I'm, you know, since I started over, I got 20 years with Scambia. I'm 5 years short without being penalized. But so it's easy to say that. But, you know, life is short. And, I, you know, if somebody that's ate it with a job, you know, I hate throwing names out here, but, you know, he's pretty open to us about what he does. But, you know, Fit to Fight Fire. If you know who runs Fit to Fight Fire, just look what he's done and how he's jumped around and chased what feeds his passion and what he enjoys and what's important to him. And, you know, Brian Brush, you know, I hate to throw these guys out there, but I mean, it's not like they've been secretive about it. They've moved around and done things. And I'll tell you, I study those guys. And very rarely do I see one of them that's not happier when they make that leap and that jump to a different organization. And I don't like to call it a fresh start because it's not like nobody knows who they are. They're not a used car salesman. They just get to share that passion. Even if it's not 100% of the new, you know, the new organization, it's 10. And that's what, you know, you, Corey, that you're looking for. That's what I'm looking for. We're looking for people that are excited when we talk about firefighting, that motivate us to motivate them. And we live off of each other's energy.
No doubt about it. The oxidizers, as I like to call them.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to catch you up on some comments coming at you because Jason Hovelman did chime in. He said, I will personally pay a conference fee for somebody that can make the trip. You have to go. So I'm putting that out there live. Booster backup for the win. Great lesson from Chief Ike. I'm looking for him here. There's a lot of comments, Chief, so I'm scrolling through them for you. The fire training in Pensacola Beach in 3 weeks will be like none other thanks to the vision of Kurt and so many. That's from Chris Stretch Martin. Jason Hovelman again chimed in and said, Chiefs, take your rookies to one of these conferences and spend time with them talking fire. Great advice.
Hey, real quick, I got to tell you, Chief Hovelman came to a conference and I don't know what they call it, but it's like their union president. They have a different term in Missouri. What do y'all call it? It's not the union president, but like the master of the union or God, he'll comment and
he'll
say,
comment.
Yeah, but he, and they brought their firefighters there and it was, you know, management, leadership, and labor and management coming together, the union, and come to a conference to literally infect these young firefighters that, hey, this isn't your rookie school. This isn't your junior college instructor. This is professional development, high energy, professional speakers, legit hands-on. And I tell you, man, I was guilty years ago. When I was a younger firefighter, I didn't care about the bar. I didn't care about the social thing. It was all about training. And, you know, as a business guy and marketing and smart, I finally realized that, you know what, there are people that are coming here that if we can give them the proper package of a good breakfast, a decent, you know, they're not being rushed for lunch, and at nighttime they can have, you know, regardless if they drink or not, they have a good time, I might capture that group that's not ate up with it like us. And that's what's powerful. And that's what we try to do is – training is 100% our top priority. But if we've got to throw in a little bit more social aspect, a little bit more brotherhood and poofing off and all that other stuff, and that sends them home excited to be on the job and the fire department and read them out, that's it, man. You know, we want to talk about balance between family and the fire department. Well, shit, man, people like you and I that are ate up with it, that want to train from 6 a.m. to, you know, 10 p.m., maybe we got to back off a little bit and give balance for that guy that maybe only wants to train 6 hours. And if that's what it takes to get them on board with us, and that's what we do. And it's been a learning curve for me to realize that that sometimes less is more. And I'll say that again, less is more.
Nice, nice. Beautifully said, Chief. I'm going to catch you up. I got about 18 people that said shop steward as far as the title.
That's it, shop steward. I couldn't remember what it was. We don't have that in Florida, so I always forget.
Justin Lorenzen said, the wife and I attended COBC a few years ago. It was one of the best conferences I attended. The wife really enjoyed it as well. Strongly recommend it.
COBC, man, I don't even know. It's basically sold out. We posted the other day we had the spots. I haven't closed registration. I just know some COVID people are going to cancel. But, we haven't shut it down, but it's borderline being shut down because we're already sitting at like 600 people. I'll tell you this. It's going to be like no other COBC. Jessica and I are going to open on Tuesday morning. That's the 2 days after Mother's Day. And this is her idea. We've never talked about this in the past. She brought it up. She's going to talk about how we got married and literally less than a year later, she's attending the funeral of Maurice Bartholomew, which is 201 on the CFT logo, signed to the back engine five. Anybody that follows me know that's what drives the conferences. And, you know, I was a pallbearer to carry his casket and put it in the back of a fire. And for her, you know, I'm interested to hear what her perspective is. As a newlywed, no kids yet, you know, wife of a firefighter, a fireman dies in a one-story private dwelling. You know, I went to the fire. He's one of my firemen. I got him assigned to the company. And, you know, she other day, just in a little bit of time, I didn't want to ask you questions because I don't want to get emotional, but it was a game changer for her as a spouse to understand the importance of investing in yourself, her supporting me investing, and then being a part of the firehouse, the fire department, and what's going on. And we're going to open that first morning, and there's going to be 200 spouses there. That's not a joke. I'm not exaggerating. 200 firefighter spouses. That didn't count the hundreds of firemen that are going to be coming to Pensacola Beach. And we're going to be in that big room, and we're going to talk about marriage and line of duty deaths and some of the stuff that the military, that they do with wives, spouses of, you know, military personnel, more specifically military officers. And then day two, Chief McGrail and his wife, Gina from Denver, are going to talk about, you know, marriage and the fire service. And both him and I know what it's like to be a target, man, embracing the target on your job. And, you know, some people call it jealousy, whatever. I call it just outgrowing your organization, you know, and I'm just being frank. You've gotten so big into the job, not bigger than anybody else, but you're so big into the job. I'm sure, Courtney, you're doing these things. Not everybody loves it on your department, your area that you're doing this. Right. You know what I mean? They probably don't give two shits that you're doing this, but, you know, Frank Mizguso said it at dinner when we were at ODP. His exact thing was, he said, I know 25 people right now on the national circuit that speak in the fire service around a country that are hated on their job by their own people. It's more common than it's not. And the reality is, we're not better than the people in our fire department. They just have different interests in them, and we make them insecure because our interest is the job that we do, that when we go to work, they know that we know that today, January 26, two firemen in 2014 died in Toledo, Ohio, in a two-story white converted building. And, you know, for me, less than a year before, I was eating chicken wings with one of them at the Bowling Green, fire school. And that's what guys on your job, I'm talking to everybody that's listening, guys on your job don't get that. You go to these conferences and you meet people. And I'm getting fired up. Yes. Every time I hear a line of duty death, I don't care. You know what I mean? If it's Florissant, Missouri, where Chief Hovelman is, you know, if it's Oakland, California with Daryl Liggins or Dennis Laguerre, I mean, if it's a fire department, and I mean, I'm like, shit, do I know somebody there? Right. Oh, yeah, I know so-and-so and so. I hope it's not them. You know, my first cousin, Rob Isaacson, works on L.A. County, California. I mean, something happens in L.A. County, I got to make sure it's not my cousin, my dad's brother's son. And you know, every time something happens, when Michael Davison died on 69 engine in Harlem, man, like, you know, I've been there before, with Ray McCormick and Mike Hayes, some big top mentors of mine. I've been to that farm. Like every time a line of duty death happens in a firehouse, around the country, I'm like, oh, I mean, I have to stop and think. I might know these people.
Right.
And a lot of you listening, people in your job, they don't get that. They don't go to fire conferences. They don't teach. They're not connected in the world of buffing and fire service stuff. And it doesn't make us better than them. It just makes us more complicated than them. That's what it really does. We're not better than them. We're just more complicated. And it really puts more stress on us. It puts more insecurity on them, which it shouldn't. They should just be like, hey, you know, do you know somebody? I'm going to this city. Maybe you could connect me with a farmer. Oh, yeah, I know like six guys there. I can probably get you a cheaper deal on a condo, you know. And it's one, you know, it's one of those deals. And I think, you know, by the time you figure it out and you get old enough, you're off the job and it doesn't matter no more. There's one of those, I don't remember what it was. It was a pretty cool meme that, like, when you're in 20s, this is what you worry about. When you're in 30s, this is what you worry about. When you're 40s, you don't give a shit no more. You know what I mean?
Finally.
It is what it is. But I think that, you know, it's easy to be negative about people being in the job. But as long as we have whatever you want to call it, the 1%ers, 5%ers, the people listening tonight, the people that go to conference, the people that run conferences, they're making the real difference. When you're putting on a conference for the first time in your local city, fire department, municipality, God bless you, man. I wish everybody in a fire service knew what it took to put on a conference. And I wish they knew the lack of return. And this isn't for me. I'm talking about, you know, David putting on the Lake of the Ozarks or, you know, whoever, man. One of a MAFSE. Man, the Metro Atlanta Fire Conference, I mean, nobody will ever top what they did and how they did it for free and the board of directors and chief tanks. And, you know, if people knew what went on behind the scenes, man, they would keep their mouths shut They would just think those guys, they would think those guys were freaks, because the people that are lobbing bullets, they're out making $200, $300, $400 a day building fences and building bathrooms and showers and laying tile floors and doing whatever else. And these guys are volunteering their time to make a fire conference happen in a backyard, begging people to come for $100 for 3 days.
No, and getting complaint. You try to put it in your own jurisdiction so your guys can come, and then people complain they have to go on duty.
It's crazy. No, man. And you know what? You'll eventually just get over it. You know, Brian Brush asked the question this last summer, man. Like, you know, JJ Cassetta, one of my best friends from Orlando, brought his wife and kids up, and man, they'll be in trouble that they don't come every single year. But, like, you know, he came up and stayed at our house. They were in the RV because of COVID, and we hooked them up in the driveway. And then Brian Brush and his awesome wife and kids came and stayed. And, like, that was the highlight of my summer with COVID, man. A buddy from Oklahoma. I mean, really? Come on. And a buddy from South Florida. I mean, not that I don't have some great, awesome local friends, but the highlight of my COVID summer of 2020 was two brothers and their families staying at my house, you know, to hang out and just chill out. And that's my goal when I retire is, man, it's not a joke. I got a list of buddies all over the country that I'm going to go on vacation with. A man, I hope he's listening. Rob Fisher and his wife, Jody, they are taking me to Spain, Italy, and everywhere else because they're world travelers. Nice. And they got it figured out, man. I've square rooted this shit. I am hooking up with somebody that's got something to offer to me that I enjoy, you know, intellectually hanging out with them because they're more intelligent than me, so I can learn something from them.
I love it. All right, I'm gonna try and catch up. Here we go. I have one question. This is a question I know you get a lot, but it has been asked, and I said I would ask it, and it was like, "What can you explain? It's worth the risk." So we have someone who does not know it's worth the risk.
No, I love that. That's a legitimate question. So,
okay.
The wristbands on my thing. So I have a standard phrase that I tell somebody. So if you're wearing a wristband, you know, you get it at one of our conferences and, you know, Jim, you know, Mr. Smith, Miss Smith off the street walks up and says, so what is this worth the risk? It's a simple saying. It's worth the risk for me to risk my life to save yours. I am an American firefighter that volunteered to sign up to work for the fire department. Yes, I get paid. I'm employed. But I volunteer just like our military has volunteered, other than a draft. And I am willing to put my life on the line to save yours. It's that simple. It's worth the risk for me to risk my life to save yours. That is the whole premise of it. is it about interior firefighting and aggressive fire? Yeah, that's great. That's all the spin. But the real basic mission statement of the wristband, the T-shirt, is it's worth the risk for a firefighter to risk their life to save a civilian's life. That's what we signed up for. It's no more complicated than that. It's pretty basic.
Dude, that is. That keeps it simple, man. I love that, man. Yep. But no, I wanted them to know, because if you like, yes, I'm glad you explained it, because you explained it so eloquently. Next question we have, I want to catch you up with some other, okay. I'm scanning through. Chief Isaacson's message motivated me to start his own job fire training LLC and try to make the fire service better than I found it. Thank you, Chief. Chief Ike, how has COVID affected the way you train while on duty?
I mean, you know, that's a controversy. I mean, you got to remember, when you're on the fire department, you got to be careful what the CDC is saying, what your state saying, what the county's saying. As a whole, I mean, you know, our department has, you know, we had some hands-on training that was going on last spring that a few people complained, and I don't have a problem with them complaining. You know, everybody's different about how they get worried about this stuff. And you got to remember, some of these people, you don't know if they're going home to an 80-year-old father or grandfather or whatever. COVID is legit for older people. You know, do I think younger people are okay? You know, I think that we're doing okay. But I think, you know, it's a risk that everybody has to have their own opinion and manage it. But training has to go on. We have to move forward with it. That question would be a little more, you know, detailed, I guess, you know, 6 months ago. You know, we're getting the vaccines now. You know, more and more people are getting, the more people that get it, I mean, from what I've read, that should help us. I can tell you, for us, we only canceled one conference last May, Command Officer Boot Camp. In August of last year, we moved forward. We had Water on a Fire. I will tell you that Water on a Fire, though, to make sure nobody thought that it was about, you know, money or profit for us, we gave a gold pass to anybody and everybody that didn't want to come. No ifs, ands, or buts. You didn't have to ask a question. If you got in for $199, your gold pass was worth $550. That's what we did. And we had the conference, and there was no negative feedback. We didn't get one person call us, not a chief, nobody saying, you know, we spread COVID. And we had a great week last August. And then in December, I canceled ATROC. I moved it to February. We weren't going to have any training. And, man, I'll tell you, I need these conferences on Pensacola Beach more than the attendees do. My wife, we were having a long walk today, and she said, you know, it's tough for me right now at my job, my department. It really is. I think everybody on my fire department knows it. I'm holding on by a bare string, just, you know, because, you know, there's big things I want to do operationally, and, you know, our staffing's been cut. And when you're a part of something that's infancy stage and you build it up and you feel like somebody's purposely breaking it down, it gets complicated. So I need CFT. CFT keeps me alive more than anything, man. Just running the conference, it's a way for me on my days off to be pinging. Today I was on the phone with over a dozen different people, vendors, instructors. I mean, my ADHD was bouncing off the wall today, doing emails and calls, you know, signing a contract with Dreamcatcher Shuttle Service for the next year. And so, you know, for us, the conference is really, man, it keeps me going. So in December, we're like, the hotel was like, oh my God, we're going, you know, we're broke. There's nobody staying out here. The bridge is out. So I didn't even know how I was going to pay for it. And I'm standing at the Hilton on the 17th floor talking to the boss man. I said, we'll do a free benefit fire conference. We get in the car to leave, and Jessica says, how are we paying for this? Oh, I don't know. I didn't think about that. You know, the Hilton's still going to charge us for the multimedia and the coffee and the banquet room. And that can be 20, 30, you know, the price can be, you know, more than people that have ever done a conference have a clue. I'm like, I don't know, babe. I just thought it was a good idea. Once again, I'm not a business guy. I just speak. I'm a fireman, speaking from the heart. And luckily, man, we had some awesome sponsors, vendors, you know, 10-8 and MSA and Key Hose and All American Hose and Columbia Southern and Super Vac. And, you know, just I sorry if I forgot somebody, but the sponsors came through, and, you know, CFT was a sponsor too. But, you know, we didn't collect $1 of registration fee for December for the hands-on training at the Best Western, all the lectures. The instructors paid for their own travel. We provided them a hotel room. They provided their own thing. And, you know, the question is, like, how do you do training in COVID? You just do it.
Do it.
And you provide it. And if somebody didn't want to come, you don't make them come. You just, you know, you work on it. CFT ODP in January, we had about 150. That thing would have been sold out at 250. We, you know, we can go to 333 classroom style, but it was sold out. About 100 people didn't come to CFT ODP. We gave them a goal pass. Our Canadian brothers, man, they're awesome. I'm telling you what, man, the firefighters from Canada have been coming to our conferences since the creation of CFT, and they're awesome, and they were all cool. We gave them a goal pass to come to whatever they want, and no big deal. But the ones that could come because they're not quarantined, you know, they don't feel at risk. They don't feel like when they go back, they're going to be given, they're at risk to, you know, a spouse, a family member. That's great. And, you know, we did have, after CFT ODP, we did have one person that happened to be on our staff that got COVID. And I'd be lying to say if I didn't think they got it at CFT ODP. But 150 people for 6 nights, right, at the Hilton, Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, doing training with like massive experienced chiefs from Texas and, you know, Atlanta and you know, Chief Vizguso. The value is unbelievable. I mean, just for Matt Scallon and what he did for our job and his email, and now he stepped up and he's on his days off, is teaching for Chump Change to motivate others. You know, I hope that answers this question. Is shit, it's worth the risk, man. You know, you got to value it, and it's a risk management operation. I mean, the coin's up back there on Corey's flag. I can see it above behind his head on the wall there.
It's the third from the whichever side that is.
Yeah, third from the right.
Thank you.
You know, so it's worth the risk is about, it's worth the risk for me to risk my life to save the civilians. But there's other things, too. You got to value it, man. You know, Jessica and I were more nervous than we've ever been back at ODP 2 weeks ago. But, you know, we had too many people that wanted to come. They wanted to get out of their home. They needed, yeah, to hang out with like-minded firefighters. They needed that Monday to wear their Class A and say, this is what I got in the fire service about. I'm proud of this patch. I'm proud of this badge. And they needed to be motivated to go to a new level in their own personal career. And, you know, it's always easy to find an excuse to not do something, you know. And I'll just leave it at that. Hopefully that answered his question.
I think you very much so. Now, but it did, you did segue. Okay, I've been meaning to tell you this between questions or between the preaching is we're on the internet, so you don't have to censor yourself unless you're just feeling the need to censor yourself. Because you mentioned it earlier. But
I'm just trying. My wife's on, man. My dad was against four-letter words. He was an instructor in the Air Force. And after my dad died 4 years ago, I went from never using four-letter words ever to it's like every other word sometimes. So
I understand.
I'm trying to rein myself back in.
That's fair.
You know, it's okay in an 8-hour lecture if you do it once or twice, but I'm trying to rein myself back into being a more professional talker.
It's the struggle.
Especially when I get a crowd.
Excellent. Okay, so I have a few questions. Well, I'm going to hit you with this one first. Eddie Steele's coming at you and said, Chief, respectfully, water wins. Why switch from 15/16 to 7/8 for an extra 25 GPM for 9 pounds of nozzle reaction, 9 pounds of fireman up? Isn't it worth the risk? Please explain.
You know, and that's really a great question. And, you know, man, know your flow and the gallons per second test that we did 21 years ago. I mean, that's a 2-hour podcast in itself. But I can tell you that, you know, it's not about, you know, manning up or being stronger. It's just about what's necessary. And, you know, I'm a big advocate of gallons per second. I'm a big advocate of 2.5-inch hose lines. But I'll never forget a couple of years ago sitting in a Mexican restaurant in Ohio or somewhere, and it was, you know, Mike Alt and Key Stakes and Steve Kerber and some of the other people on the UL test, and I could tell they were giggling, laughing at me because I'm like a 2.5 on a shotgun house fire. I'll use a 2.5 on a trailer fire. I believe in a 5-gallon bucket on a cigarette. And they were laughing at me, and they just, you know, they said, you know, we don't want to really go on the record, but if we really truly knew how little water it took to put out a fire, if we put it where it needs to go, it'd be amazing. And that comes down to my analogy about a water extinguisher. A 500-gallon booster tank is 200 water cans. a 500-gallon booster tank, an Urban City booster tank, is 200 water cans. And I don't want to get into this being a class, but we got people thinking they got to lay a supply line on a bedroom fire. But hell, you'd go in there and try to hit it with one or two cans, and you got 200 of them in the booster tank. So if that water can, it's 2.5 gallons of work, then I'll promise you, I'm glad. See, man, I was waiting for this. It's worth the risk to use a 7/8. Man up, get over your ego, drop the 15/16, drop the 9 pounds nozzle reaction, and you can see the weight rack behind me. Do 30 reps instead of 10 reps. That's the difference between a 15/16 and a 7/8. Is I don't care how badass you are, you're going to be tired earlier with a 15/16 than you are a 7/8. And even if you're phenomenal with a 15/16, you're going to be that much better with a 7/8. And you're right. You're giving up 25 gallons, but you're giving up 9 pounds nozzle reaction. And on a percentage scale, think about that. 25 off of 185 versus 9 off of 69 going back to 60. And I really prefer to even under pump the 7/8 down to about 150 gallons a minute and get it to 50-some pounds nozzle reaction. We're literally 175, 150-pound firefighter can open the 7/8, completely take their hand off the bail and never shut it down and let the water work, let the water win, move as you go and be comfortable. You don't have to mentally, physically exhaust yourself on the technique and how much time you spend in the gym just to flow some water. I mean, the reality is for 17 years, I've been standing in the front yard. I've yet to see a 7/8 back out from an interior fire attack. I'm going to say that again. 17 years in a busy, low-income metro county, I've never seen a 7/8 back out once it broke the threshold, flowing 150 gallons. Not 160, 160. We underpump them. And I'll say this and we'll move on. Don't let anybody ever lie to you. The 7/8 and the inch and an eighth are both selecto gallonage tip smoothbore nozzle tips. And what do I mean by that? And we're not going to get into it.
Okay.
A 7/8, you can underpump it and you can overpump it on 99% of all the hose that exist. An inch and an eighth, you can underpump it and you can overpump it on 99% of the hose that exist. When you start getting up to 15/16 and you underpump it, and I'm not going to throw out any brand of hose, but cheap hose, grandma's green garden hose. Everybody knows what grandma's, you know, green garden. You underpump a 15/16 on cheap hose, and you're going to have all the anti-smoothbore people freaking breathing down your neck about how pathetic a smoothbore is because it's kinking because you're using a 15/16 on cheap hose. Well, that 7/8, that little bit smaller is going to create a little bit more back pressure to compensate for that cheap hose. And that's only the answer. He's going to get me off track now, man. That's one of my but it's taken me 20-some years. I don't argue with people anymore. If your department uses 15/16, that's great. If it's working for you, it's awesome. But I'm telling you, man, any fire department in the country that does not own a smoothbore nozzle and they're buying it, I think they're crazy not to do their own personal hose and nozzle evaluation. And don't do it in a parking lot. We don't go to parking lot fires. Do it in a house, a building, 1, 2, 3-story drill tower, private dwelling with theatrical smoke, and do the gallons per second test where you can truly see what they can do under low visibility with furniture and crap moving around with the nozzle open flowing water. Is that a good enough answer?
That's perfect. You can teach school as long as you want. Just preach. I want to back up on you on the benefit concert because I missed my segue into this question that I wanted to ask you. And this actually, I talked to Brian Brush earlier this week and said, hey, I got Kurt coming on. I want a good question to ask him. And so I would love to take credit for it, but this really comes from your friend and mine, Brian. So the benefit conference that you put on in Pensacola, it was for that community that you belong to. And I'm trying to word this question right. That sense of community seems to drive like almost everything you do. When I was down there with you, like everybody knew your name, not just because you're putting on conferences, because you knew them. So just talk to me about community, basically. Go ahead.
Well, my sister graduated from Gulf Breeze High School in 1979. You know, I graduated in 1993 from Gulf Breeze. I was a little late bloomer. I was 19 when I graduated. I'm lucky I graduated, to be honest with you. I was reading Firehouse Magazine in elementary and middle school. But, I mean, the truth is, not to get real long-winded, most of the bars and the restaurants I either grew up, went to high school with, partied. You know, the owners might have been my bartenders back in the mid to early 90s at one of the bars out there. You know, where the Best Western, the Hilton, the Holiday Inn, the Hampton Inn, where all those high-rises are, 20 years ago, I was the training captain for Scambia County Fire Rescue, and I coordinated these one-story beach cottages called Surf and Sand Cottages. And I live in Gulf Breeze. I drove across a little bridge, and they rotated companies out, and I managed us cutting the roofs off on both the Gulf side and the Sound side. Redfish, Bluefish, all of that, the Tiki, the RV park, all those were one-story beach cottages called Surf and Sand Cottages with Jealousy Windows. And I managed rotating companies out for weeks and weeks and weeks, forcing doors, searching, breaching walls, cutting holes, man. It was like a Disney World. And back then, the place was a ghost town. We did it in the fall, the winter, and the spring. And so I got to see all those buildings built. As a kid in high school or middle school, we'd go out there, and I boogie board more than I surfed. Like the beach houses, I knew which ones had hot water underneath them that we could go take a shower to cool off. So, you know, for me, the benefit conference was we had the trifecta. We had COVID hit us in March. You know, we basically shut down Friday, March 13th. Then we had Hurricane Sally hit us on September 16th. And then we had Skansky's barges take out our 3-mile bridge and cut us off from 350,000 people. And so people that I grew up with and friends with were literally losing their businesses. Businesses were closing down, existed over 20 years. And, you know, our 5 conferences that we do on Pensacola Beach, even the one in May and August, they're what we call a lull week. It's when the occupancy rate of the hotels are low, like wintertime, because May, it's Mother's Day week. High schools, colleges are all still doing their final exams. So it's a beautiful weather, but nobody can go on vacation. So I'm giving you more of a depth answer.
I love it. Go as deep as you want. Go.
So really, all 5 of our conferences are built around, you know, one, the hotel rates are cheaper because the hotels can give it to us because they're not going to be sold out. It gives business when they're not going to get business anyways. Well, then when we couldn't do HROC in December, like, we got to do this benefit conference. I'm telling you, man, those businesses on Pensacola Beach, I had business owners and bartenders, waiters, get emotional with me in private when I told them what we were going to do. And you got to remember, they're not making a bunch of money. You know, this is what I try to explain to people, man. Everybody thinks everybody's making a lot of money. Do 200 firefighters buying a $15 lunch and then take away the cost of food, prep, labor, power, waterfront property taxes, hurricane, you know, insurance. They're just appreciative that somebody's there giving them some business, man. They might still not be breaking even the day that we send all those people there. And, you know, for me and Jessica and the CFT team, it was literally to say thank you for 10 years of honoring a wristband and giving 10, 15, or 20% off food when they don't have to do that. I mean, they're, you know what I mean? Like, you know, they got to eat. Or our tumbler deals that we do. Shaggy's on Pensacola Beach back in December last, you know, 2 weeks ago at CFT. They're going to be doing it at HROC in February. 50% off. They got 21 beers on draft. 21 beers on draft or a 16-ounce tumbler. You get it 50% off. I mean, I'm talking about like high-dollar, $8 IPAs. You're getting them for $4, or some beers are $2. I think it was like 75 cents for a PBR. And, you know, shit, God bless EJ, but who the hell would drink a damn PBR other than EJ? I mean, really? I mean, shit. I mean, if I drink one, it's just remembering a fallen brother. That's the only reason I drink a damn PBR. But it's still for somebody that wants to drink it. And the reality is, yes, it was about them. But, I mean, CFT ODP, the Flounders, they've never given a discount. 15% off everything on Wednesday night during it. And, you know, the negative people are like, oh, well, they're still making money. Well, yeah, but they'd still be making money because we got to eat. And You know, they truly do love the firefighters out on Pensacola Beach. They love the conferences. They love the time of year. They appreciate the spirit, the lack of seriousness of the firefighters, you know, coming in there. And, you know, to answer your question, you know, it's not a joke, man. A benefit conference was free, zero registration, $99 hotel rooms, surf and sand. Some firemen stayed for $69 a night, $79 a night, and they were able to eat for 25% off their food, 50% off beer at some places. And when it was all over, I was getting texts from the owners, man. They just loved it. And, you know, some of them even told me, they said, I don't care if I lose money on alcohol and food if my wait staff is making money to give them hope to hold on for the spring and summer. That's what they're looking for. They just can't lose their staff. They're driving an hour and a half one way in traffic to get to work to hope somebody's going to show up to tip them 20%.
Right.
Yep.
Awesome, Chief. Gee, that's awesome. Okay. I had Silas Springer speak up, but I'm scrolling because there's so many comments. I'm trying to catch up. And Silas Springer said, if Chief Ike approves, myself and a buddy have CFT 100 passes, but we are unable to make it in February. We would like two other individuals to have the opportunity to attend the training. So if you and Chief approve, keys, give them away to anyone watching this scrap at the end tonight. So that's up to you. That's your conference. So I don't know.
Oh, no. Here's the deal. No. He can give them to whoever he wants. The CFT 100, how many people, can you tell how many people are watching right now?
272 currently.
Awesome. Well, 272 people. I'm going to tell you right now, the CFT 100 is literally one of the biggest things I'm proud of. It's something I wish I had when I was in the training division 20 years ago. The CFT 100 is $1,000 and gets an individual, a department, a volunteer department, a fools group, a pass to five conferences. And it's just like owning box seats at a football game or a basketball game. It doesn't matter who sits in it. So if you buy a CFT 100, you could literally give it to all five conferences, the five different, you could sell it. I don't care. If you buy a CFT 100 for $1,000 for all five conferences, that's $200 a conference. If you average it out,
right,
you pay the full price, it's $550 a conference. So if you buy all five conferences individually, it's $2,700+. That's how stupid of a price it is. But if you own those, you can give them to whoever you want. Within a week to a month out, we'll email all CFT 100s and we'll give them a code. All you do is give that code to whoever you want to register, and they get to register with that code. It zeroes it out. So, you know, we want the 100 CFT 100 because there's only 100 spots for the CFT 100 because we just can't do more than that, and we wouldn't be able to pay the bills. But it's awesome, man. We got all kinds of fire departments that we're taking care of a COVID, man. We got a bunch of fire departments that didn't want to come to what we had. One fire department had six CFT 100s for last year, and they had a bunch of sick firefighters on COVID back in August for water on a fire. That they automatically, we rolled them over to this August. We're not a corporate. We're not, you know, corporation. Jessica and I, we're firefighters. I paid out of pocket for all my conferences. You buy a conference pass and you can't come, we don't do refunds because it gets too complicated with our C-Vent registration box on it. But it never expires. We roll it over. You can sell it. You can give it to her. What we want is somebody eventually coming to sit in that seat to get that training for what a crazy price. So to answer his question, you can give it to whoever you want.
Fair enough.
You know, and if you're a CFT 100 member out there, before each conference, Jessica will email you a different, each conference is a different code where you go on that conference and you fill it out. Just like you're going to pay, you put in that code and it zeroes out the cost. But I'm going to tell you, man, the CFT 100 is huge. I mean, it's a steal of a deal. We got so many fire departments that are buying 2, 4, 6 of them. And it's a way to send different firefighters to the different disciplines throughout the year, knowing that you're only going to pay $200 registration fee for a conference.
That's awesome. So Silas, I don't know if I have the ability to even figure out how to give one away or who is after one tonight. So I will say this, Jason Hovelman has offered to pay someone to go to a conference. So contact Jason Hovelman if you're interested in that. He says, if you get there, he'll pay your registration fee. And then Silas has two of the 100s to give away. And if you want to give it away on the scrap, I will work it out with you. But at the moment, I don't know exactly how to do it. So we'll continue on with questions. Is that fair?
Sounds great.
All right. I had one here that I didn't know about. So I was trying to scroll up. Gustavo Salcido said, what motivated you personally to come up with the lost firefighter speech?
The loss. I'm not sure what he's talking about.
I don't know either. I wasn't sure, so I hadn't heard of it. So.
When I talked to CFTODP, I make so much shit up on the spot, man. I can't remember what I said yesterday. The lost fire. And actually, it's funny he says that is I'm going to build a program called the Lost Firefighter. And it really is. It's me being lost sometimes, really. And you know, it's one of those things that I think. You know, some people get in the job because, you know, it's just, you know, they wouldn't apply for the cable company, the power company, whatever, the water department. And then some people get in it because they know somebody, they got a father, they get on the job, they're hot and heavy, they don't go to any conferences, and they just get lost. You know what I mean? Like, they just, you know, they're just coming to work collecting a check. They're not reading Firehouse Magazine or Fire Engineering or FDTN's newsletter. They're not going to conferences, and they just get lost. And I'll tell you, I'm going to get sidebarred here again. What I notice is more times than not, when a firefighter goes to a civilian fire fatality, or worse yet, man, a line of duty death of a fireman early in their career, is a game changer for what their career is going to be and how much they're into it. Because they learn early on that what you can and can't do on a fire ground, what the people you work with can and can't do, is a decision and deciding factor on how people live and die. Whether it's you doing a VES, whether you went left and you should have gone right because your dumbass didn't realize the bedroom's to the right and you're going to the garage at 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, or whatever, that motivates them. You know, but the lost in that lost firefighter before, where, you know, I call it the 30-year third grade teacher, Miss Bryant, from where my wife taught, is it's hard to do this job for 30 years and stay into the job for 30 years. You know, I think about being a 17-year battalion chief, and there's times where I think I'm bored being a 17-year battalion chief. I'm not bored with the fire service. You know, I'm not bored with, you know, learning and knowing what's going on, but you just get bored with doing the same, you know, the exact same job. You know, I think that's why sometimes it's not bad to go from an engine to a truck or a truck to an engine. I mean, Every once in a while, an engine fireman's got to be on a truck to teach him math. So that's critical information. But the thing is, you know, the lost firefighter is something I'm going to work on in the future and hopefully be a program to help those, you know, kind of find their way lost. You know, earlier, Bo Vest put that, you know, he claims that I helped him get reinvigorated in 2014. Scott Slocum earlier posted a little video. He's helping out with cleaning up my third grade website, County Fire Tactics. He's going to start kind of dressing it up a little bit. And, you know, he's told me before that coming to the conferences has kind of reinvigorated him. And I think anybody that goes to a fire conference, whether it's Orlando Fire Conference, Fort Lauderdale, Massey, Lake of the Ozarks, man, the Barriers of the Oath, I mean, you know, FD Training, FD Tactics, I mean, I wish I could, you know, obviously Fire Nuggets. I mean, all the conferences, Firemanship PDX. Shit, man, if you go to Fireman PDX, which is not going on right now in Portland, and that don't fire you up, you're right. Dead. You're done. Quit. Go be a trash man. You know, so I think the lost firefighter is just something that's kind of was on top of my heart then. But I'm going to turn it into a program, and it really probably should be like for rookies, and then for anybody that's been on the job for a long time that's just kind of like, you know, looking their way to get reinvigorated. I had a captain when I was in Pensacola, and he had 28 years on the job. He literally was down about 18 months, less than 2 years, and he wanted to buy the little miniature Halligan tool from me. At the time, I was wrapping them. I was buying them from Bob Farrell Fire Hooks. I had this wrap with a sling. I called it the engine Halligan, like, so you could hands-free, but you had a little bitty small Halligan for forcing, you know, single room occupancy door. And he wanted one. I was like, really, Cap? And he had a long talk with me. He said, man, I'm disappointed. I wasted the last 28 years. I got less than 2 years left. And he was buying his own tools with less than 2 years left on the job. He had been lost. and I don't want to take credit, but he hadn't worked with the right people to say, this is a badass job, man, and hopefully we're going to go to a fire today. I don't want anybody's shit to burn down, but if it is, I want to be on duty, and I want to be there, and I want to force the door, and I want to pull the ceiling, I want to flow the water, and I want to do the search, and I want to get on the roof, and I want to come back in, and passion feeds passion, man. And if you get around people that have a purpose, and that purpose, they have a mission, and then you back it up with passion, they're unstoppable, man. And they're going to feed everybody else. And, you know, every time I get negative, because I get negative too, man, I'm not always positive. I'm fighting some crap, you know, that I wish I wasn't fighting right now with the direction of what's going on. But when I wake up and go to bed, I love the American Fire Service, man. I love the fire department. And, you know, I got to say this, and we'll take another question, is, you know, Jessica taught full time for 2 years and she did a little bit of subbing. But other than that, man, everything we own, my kids' clothes, my son being in a fraternity at the University of Florida, I mean, travel, soccer, everything we own, everything I have is paid for by the fire service. Whether it's working, putting out fires, whether it's teaching, the fire service has provided a pretty awesome life for me. And I know some guys out there aren't doing that great, and I'm sorry for you, and I hate it. But I will tell you that part of it's on your own behalf to get off your ass and do something. This is no joke. For over 20 years, I've been putting in an average of over 100 hours a week. For 4 years, I was pulling 56 hours a week in Pensacola and 45 in the county full-time, collecting sick leave and annual leave of both jobs. I could have been on insurance for both jobs. And I'm not saying that's for everybody. But, you know, I mean, shit, man, if you want to get after it, you got to get up at 4 a.m. and go to bed at midnight. I mean, you can't wake up at 10 and go to bed at 4 and expect to get somewhere. And so half of it is some guys just got to get off their ass. And when it's promotion time, the guy that picks up the book the day they announce the reading list, his ass ain't getting number one. It's going to be the guy that's been reading since the last test. Right. It's the guy that came to ODP. It's the guy that's on reading Firehouse Magazine, Fire Engineering. It's talking to talk, walking to walk, 365 days a year. So when they're in an interview, it's comfortable. They can just – it's smooth. There's no, like – they're not, like, guilty because the chief says, well, what conference did you go to? Conferences? What's a conference? You know what I mean? Right. Like, I mean – you got to be investing in yourself every day. Investment is about the future. And you ain't got to just read Tony Robbins or John Gordon or John Maxwell. You want to be successful? That shit don't happen by waking up late and going to bed early. You got to invest. And it takes decades, man. You know, Jessica, today, you're getting me on a fired up. Now, we were walking today, and I was feeling guilty about a couple of things. And Jessica, we were walking, and she said, this is my wife talking to me. What you have... basically what she said, what you have started when you were a kid. Right. I started wearing bunker gear in 1988 as a junior fireman. People were picking on me when I was in middle school and high school. I was reading Firehouse and Fire Engineering Magazine. I was hanging out in a volunteer fire department. On Friday and Saturday night, I was waiting to go to a fire, you know what I mean, instead of going to the party. You know, and this isn't about me. It's hopefully about motivating you. And I got a friend, well, no, I actually got three friends that have kids on a job, and you know, the three friends, their kids aren't into the job near as much as they are. I actually got more than three. But three close friends, their kids are on a job and they're not into it as much as them. And that's fine. But I mean, if they're going to be half the fireman their dad is, they better get off their ass and start working, because it ain't going to happen by chance, man. And, you know, I'm not even answering a question, but Jessica, my kids are most likely not going to be firemen. My oldest for sure not, but that's fine. They need to do what they want to do to make them happy. But she was always worried about them being firemen and riding my tailcoat and me being on their ass because they're not, you know, at it 24/7. You know, this job, we don't get paid what Tom Brady gets paid. But guess what? It ain't about winning or losing and making it to the Super Bowl. It's about winning or losing with somebody's life. Right. Somebody's going to live and die. And I'll tell you this, everybody listening, how many of you still got listening right now, Corey?
We're at 263 currently.
263, yes, I'll guarantee a third of you have been to a call or an incident, guaranteed, in your career where somebody fucking died because somebody sucked at what they did. They sucked. excuse my four-letter word for the first time. That's fact, man. That's fact. I think part of PSD in the American Fire Service is the fact that we went on a call and we failed. Mm-hmm. And our failure was our own fault. Mm-hmm. We weren't better at getting an airway as a medic. We weren't better at stretching a line. We sucked at throwing a three-section 35. We sucked at forcing a door. You know what? We forced a door a couple times. And you know what? The doors at our station. We did that. I mean, how many door props exist in the American Fire Service and firehouses, and they haven't been forced in a month or 2 months? I mean, it ought to be criminal to have a door prop in your firehouse and there not be 100% of the time wood to go force that door anytime you want to. It ought to be illegal. It ought to be criminal that there's not always the stuff there to force that door. Hands down, this criminal. I seen a bunch of firemen look like a bunch of damn goofballs forcing doors at fires, and they got a door prop in their firehouse. All right, I got to catch a breath. What's the next question?
All right, I want to speak to Silas and Rob, the other guy who wanted to give away the pass to the conference. I want to make it happen. So at the end of the podcast at the live broadcast when we're done, I will pull up a Google spinning wheel number and I'll get the names of everybody who wants in. So hang around for the end. How's your energy, Chief? We're over an hour in, so.
I'm fine, man. I got a bottle of water. Hey, I even brought my Mountain Dew, man. For anybody that knows me, I got a Mountain Dew on standby.
There we go. So we're good to go. Okay. I'm going to find – guys, I am trying to keep up with the questions. I know I've missed some, but there's been a lot of comments. Write this down. I love it when people put all caps, write this down. So this is a badass job, man, and I hope I go to a fire today. That's a Kurt Isaacson quote from Brian Brush. Where was that question at? How do you engage, albeit slowly – fellow firefighters that are only here for the paycheck? So you've kind of touched on this, but.
You know, I'll keep this one short, man. One person at a time. You focus on one at a time. You know, I've changed my opinion on this over the years. Don't wear yourself down forcing somebody to like something you'll never force them to like. You invite them to a conference. You catch them at that right time, man. Like after they've, you know, done their fantasy football in the morning and they've taken their morning crap because they really just using that as an excuse to not mop the floor and whatever it is, you figure out the psychology. And at 9:37, when it's perfect timing and you can put Detroit Burn on or, you know, a good video, you know, I forgot the name of the one with Cap Morris on it from New York years ago, but you just kind of small doses. You know, I always like to say the one that Rob Fisher, 10 pounds of pressure 100% of the time, just a little bit of pressure on them. You know, the big thing is get them to a conference, but you got to pick wisely, man. You got to take them to something, you know, you know, if they've never been to a conference, you know, you got to get them to one where like their instructor is going to be Mike Champo. And at the end, if they don't like it, they're just an idiot. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, you're just like, it doesn't matter. Like, you mean, you got to think about it. You got to calculate. But I'll go back to what my dad said as a kid, man. You know, it's one more person to go to church on Sunday, and it's one more person on Monday night to go to the firehouse. And if we all get one more person, we double in size. And then once we fine tune them, that group doubles and it doubles and it doubles. So, you know, quality, not quantity. But the older I get, the more I realize you can't force somebody to love this job. It's just, it is what it is. And I will say I've matured. I understand some people have chose paths that their side job and kids, you know, they got sports, baseball, soccer, whatever it is, football. But a lot of them have put themselves in a financial predicament where they have to do so much on their days off working their side job, whatever it is. You know, I always like to say, you know, laying tile, remodels, build, you know, cutting grass, building fences. The thing that that's what every fireman does in this country. And that's not a bad thing. I'm a smart ass about it sometimes, but they become so dependent on that when they come to the firehouse, they don't give two shits about being a fireman. Yeah. They can't think about – all they can think about is the phone calls they need to make to line up their jobs or, you know, to invoice their lawns or invoice the people they're renting their, you know, their shacks out to, because they're, you know, slum lords or whatever it is, or, you know, they're selling solar panels, you know, whatever the hell it is. And I'm not being rude. I mean, it's a gazillion things. Shit, I'm at work. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. I'm not going to call the kettle black. I just happen to be, my shit's firefighting. But I chose that at a young age, that mine was going to be about the fire service. And if one of my kids was going to be in the fire service, that's exactly what I would want them to do. You know, so to answer your question, man, you can't make something, somebody love it like you. You can just kind of slowly feed it to them and just hope they do. And focus on the ones you think you're going to be successful with.
Awesome. Yeah. No, 100%. And I love it. I love seeing you get fired up when you say, I'm going to keep it short and then get to preaching. It's awesome, yeah. Man. Walter Lewis. And it's fun to see the alumni of the scrap coming on, because Walter Lewis said, hey, horse, there's the water. And Jason Hoffelman said, it's difficult to move members more than 3 degrees. A 3-member will likely not ever be a 9. The best they may be is a 6, if that makes sense. So got some great guys chiming in on those answers.
Well, I mean, what in the hell is Walt Lewis and Jason Hoffelman on here for? You know what I mean? Like, think about that. You know, the last question the guy's asking, how do we get a young, you know, a young firefighter, another firefighter to love it? But we got Chief Walt Lewis from Orlando, district chief, Chief Jason Hoffelman, you know, a fire chief, you know, on here listening. I ain't got nothing. I'm not teaching them guys anything. And I'm truly not. But they just want to just hang out and listen to something they already know about, just because they want to hang out with like-minded people. And that's the reality, man. It's like, you know, orthopedic surgeons, neurosurgeons, they hang out with other neurosurgeons because they just talk the geek language. I mean, you know, that's just how it's how it works, man. You know, I go back to what I said earlier. When I retire, I'm going to be hanging out with firefighters from all over the country. Literally, it's not, I mean, Jessica and I are going to travel, have people come hang out on our dock and vacation. I'm going to have like conferences where you don't pay anything. It'll just be like, hey, this week, a bunch of, you know, retired firemen and their wives are going to hang out at Beach Club condos or Portofino on Pensacola Beach. But not everybody's looking to do that. I mean, we work with a lot of people that are boring and they don't care about being the best they can be. I mean, obviously they want to get promoted to make more money, but when they retire, they're going to sit down and watch TV and Netflix every night. They're not going to be interacting with other retired firefighters from all over the country. And I feel sorry for them, man. I really do. I pray for them as much as I think about it. And that's not very much, because I don't waste my time thinking about it.
Nice. Okay. I had one for you, which this is one of my quotes. This one was one of those, it shouldn't have been, but it was. And it is, you said it up here in Oklahoma. Now you said it again at Commanding from the Sidelines, which is, you have to flow water to need water.
Hold on a second. Let me make sure what time it is. I don't know if we got. I'll keep it short. I'm going to set a timer. I'm not kidding. I'm going to set a timer for this. 5 minutes.
Okay.
This is not a joke, man. Because, like, this is my top passionate thing is gallons per second and booster tank attack. And I think our main problem is the ignorance. It doesn't mean they're stupid. They just don't know any better. Is commanding officers lacking water application intelligence. I'm going to say that again. It's a lack of command officers, fire ground commander, understanding, you know, water application intelligence. That's all it is. And I'm setting a timer. So the reality is, I talked about the water can, a 500 gallon city tank. That's 200 cans, a 750 urban or suburban county tank. That's 300 water cans. If you happen to be a 1,000-gallon booster tank, it's 400 water cans. And that's where gallons per second comes from. And literally a bedroom fire on a 2.5 attack, 2.5 gallons a second, or a 150 at 50, you're talking about 20 seconds to knock down the bedroom. It's actually disappointing. You've waited 2 weeks for the right night for your wife to want to actually engage with you, and the shit's over in 30 seconds. Think about that. I mean, that's what it is in a fire.
Right.
It's like you waited a month or 2 months for a job, and it's out in 30 seconds. 30 seconds is 75 gallons of water. And we got people laying us supply lines before we even got like we've even started using a water, and we possibly got Johnny and Susie trapped. Now, I mean, we got Walt Lewis on here. Now, if this house is across the street from the main firehouse in Orlando, that's different. They got like 25 guys on duty. I'm talking about 99% of the fire service, where it's one rig pulling out of a firehouse with two, three, or luckily four people on a rig. You need that second rig to get there to help you with the first line, to use the water in the booster tank on top of the water in a second booster tank, to force a door, push in past the threshold, put water on the fire, and search for the most important thing we do, occupants, to save their lives. And so you got to be using water to need water. And this bullshit that people keep regurgitating because they think it'll get them a seminar, a gig, or teaching, or because the IFSTA manual, God bless you Oklahoma people, Brian Brush, but the IFSTA manual told us that we need to lay a line. Hell, shit, I've been on a fire truck dozens and dozens of times on a second new engine catching a hydrant, and the third new engine couldn't get in because we were blocking them. But God forbid we went straight in and let the third new rig catch the hydrant. I mean, we ought to go back to SOPs because they were better than SOGs. I can promise you that. And it's just ignorant, man. You know, I say it when I teach command and control classes, is we need smart, intelligent fire ground commanders that can view the fire scene, view the fire ground through the eyes of a fire ground commander, not the eyes of a firefighter, not the eyes of a fire chief that's at home in bed that works Monday through Friday, the eyes of a fire ground commander that has tactical competency, has tactical experience, and their ass really ought to be wearing a white helmet in front of a building on fire, making time-compressed decision-making to literally maximize staffing based on time-delayed tactics. And I'm telling you, it's probably the biggest problem in American fire service is one fire department copying and pasting another fire department's SOGs when their staffing ain't the same, their time distance travel ain't the same, their buildings are not the same, their frequency of fire activity is not the same. And am I running out of time? I got 1 minute, 30 seconds. That's a problem. So yeah, you got to be using water to need water. And I'm going to tell you, you can take it for what it's worth. I don't care if I offend you. There are people that are dead, civilians in this country that we put in body bags. They're underground 6 feet because the fire department fucked up. And the first new rig laid a line, or the second new rig laid a line, and it was 10 or 15 minutes before we did a search because they were consumed with a static sustained water supply because they couldn't calculate the National Fire Academy flow or the Iowa formula flow or just basic common sense. We got 1,000 gallons between two rigs, and we got a bedroom on fire. We got a kitchen on fire. I mean, shit. What a water can do when you've got 400 of them. I mean, just use some common sense. Did I answer his question?
Yeah. Absolutely. I love it. That's one of my, and like I said, it was an eye opener to me, sadly to say, when you brought
that. No, man, it's idiotic, man. You know, I've said it numerous times when I teach. One of my top priorities when I retire is to have converted as many fire departments, rural, suburban, and urban. Because urban departments have firehouses on the outskirts, not downtown, the outside, that run in private dwellings that they run by themselves with three or four on a rig. There's big city fire departments that ride three on a rig, one engine in a firehouse, and the next firehouse is on a medical call, and it's going to be 3, 4, 5, 6 minutes. Hell, if it's 2 minutes, hold your breath for 2 minutes and see how that works out.
Right. I think the quote I saw that I laughed at the most was, if vertical ventilation doesn't work, close your fireplace flue and see how that works out.
Oh, yeah. I've been saying that for years, man. These ignorant individuals that don't understand, you know, ventilation. We need ventilation more today than we've ever needed in the history of the fire service. Horizontal, vertical, positive pressure, natural, hydraulic. We're telling everybody in the American Fire Service, the shit's nastier, deadlier, more thicker, more dense than it's ever been. But, oh, God, we don't need ventilation. No, we just got to be more intelligent about it. You got to read the 675-page report, not just the Cliff Notes, you dumbass. You got to invest in yourself, read it, not just some little two-minute video that said, well, if you cut a hole in the roof, it'll burn a house down. Well, shit, yeah, if you don't have an engine company inside pulling sealants, putting water on the fire, at the same time you're cutting a hole in the roof. I mean, the reality is vertical ventilation is needed more now than it's ever needed. But we got to be smarter about when, where, and how we do it. Timing's everything. And that's why UL is awesome. They're really trying to get down to understanding what is truly a coordinated fire attack. You know, it's not 30 years ago on a live burn where we break the windows and then push down the hallway. We sometimes push down the hallway, flow water on thick black smoke. We can't see shit. The thermal imager doesn't see shit. We just know we flowed a good amount of water, and now we take the window. We still need a vent, though.
Did I lose you?
No, I'm here.
Okay. It's cut off very suddenly. Time is everything. These are my notes from Commanding on the Sidelines, where I got a lot of my questions today. Time is everything on the fire ground. I was looking for, but I won't dig through that right now. If you have questions for Chief, get them in while you can, because we're winding down. I've kept him up here for almost an hour and a half, so we're at 90 minutes almost. So I have to ask you this, and I want to touch on embracing the guilt. And the reason I wanted to bring it up is because if people have seen you speak on it, it's very powerful, very moving. For me personally, I've never experienced line of duty death. Knock on wood. I hope I never have to in my career, or you know. I've been very blessed in the death I've had to deal with, but I still want to keep the same fire that has, when you say embrace the guilt, that drive that it has given you, is there a way to project forward that, like, maybe you haven't hit it, but if you don't, you will, might have to face that. Does that make sense? What I'm trying to ask?
Well, man, I wouldn't wish nobody,
sure.
I wouldn't wish on anybody, the carrying the weight of, you know, embrace the guilt. Embrace the guilt for me really is, you know what, you can't go back in time, you know. And for me, it's a lot of things. I've had quite a few very close friends commit suicide, a fireman commit suicide. I took the last picture of him on the back of the rig a few days before he killed himself. Maurice in a fire as a kid. We lost a fireman in Midway. It was the only time my mom and dad hell, they forgot my birthday. My birthday was a couple days later. You know, so the reality is, when I say embrace the guilt, man, is you're going to feel sorry for yourself a lot longer than anybody else is going to feel sorry for yourself. And eventually you got to stop feeling sorry for yourself, and you just got to embrace the crap, and you got to focus and move forward, and you got to embrace it, and you got to do the best you can, man. You know, and I'll just use two examples, whether it's Maurice dying in a 1200 square foot house fire and knowing what I could have done before to maybe fix it. Or, you know, my last conversation with, you know, Matt Negley from Orlando. You know, I'd become very close and personal with him and shared some very intimate, you know, information. But I didn't see the warning signs. You know, we had Dina Alley share mental health at ODP last week, and I'll be doing more of that at our conferences, because that's embrace the guilt, man. I you know, people are going to show up, and they're not signing up to come listen to Dina talk about mental health or, you know, suicide. But I'm going to embrace the guilt by continuing to talk about death on the nozzle. Firefighters can die in 1,200 square foot house fires. You can be Matt Negley with a beautiful wife, two awesome kids that you spent $100,000 to have, all the money in the world. And, you know, if you got demons inside, you got demons inside, man. And we can't go back and, you know, we can't bring back those people, but we can never stop talking about them. You know, and I've had this before. I've thought, you know, there's probably people in the audience like, wow, there's Kurt talking about Maurice again. That shit was 20 years ago. Fuck, I don't give a shit if that's what they say. 20 years from now, I'm still going to be talking about Maurice 40 years later, because his little kid grew up without a dad, and he'll never have that. You know, I'll never stop talking about, you know, Matt. I'll never stop talking about, you know, Skyler. I'll never stop talking about my buddy Kevin Johnson. I mean, the reality is, when you stop talking about him, you forgot. We say never forget. Well, never forget means never forget. We still talk about the 23rd Street collapse. Still talk about the Wambaugh fire. I mean, do we, you know, Toledo, Ohio was 6 years ago. Do we have 1 year that we just say, well, screw January 26th. Who cares about two firemen that died in Toledo? No, we never stop forgetting about that. It's history. And more important to history, it's individuals that left family members behind. And to embrace that guilt, you share that message. And you hopefully change somebody else's life. And hopefully you open somebody else's, you know, eyes that they'll become a better firefighter, whether it's tactically, emotionally, or mentally, and just open them up. And you know, sometimes you just got to take your own demons, you know, full bore or straight on. You know, I'm pretty open about it, man. When I'm talking on the dock, I'm sure there's somebody like, oh, shit, he does this. You're right, I do. I'm coaching myself. I mean, the most powerful voice is the voice in your head. The most powerful voice is the voice in your head. So when I'm teaching and I'm talking, or specifically when I'm on the dock and I'm doing what people think of like a Southern Baptist preacher, I'm really trying to coach myself to not give up on those. Like on Fire Vigilance, if you go to their Facebook page, it's about stopping complacency. I have to fight complacency. You know, and if I'm fighting it, a lot of people are. We go to a lot of jobs. I had two good jobs my last shift. They had two good jobs last night. And if in Escambia County, I'm getting a complacent, the people I work with, I mean, places that aren't going to a job a month, I know they are, and it's our job to build each other up and fight off complacency. And whether it's mental health or tactical ability, we got to continue to raise the bar of expectation, because people live and die based on your investment in yourself and your abilities at the time of the 911 call.
Nice. I love it every time you talk about it, Chief. It hits me deep. Now, you just said Baptist preacher, so I have this question written down, which is, you have a very infectious style when speaking. I would almost say it's like a Baptist preacher. So where did that come from? Have you always been kind of bombastic or just fired up, or however, whatever word you want to put on it?
Oh, I'm just an obnoxious individual. That's all there is to it. I feel very lucky that I have the very personal, close friends. Most of my very close friends, they're not introverts, but they're like pretty subdued individuals. I mean, people on here know Shannon Stone. Like, he might not say five words if somebody didn't come and talk to him, you know. So, or my buddy JJ Cassetta from Orlando, my lifelong best friend George Foss, he's a training chief in Pensacola. That guy, man, he just sits there and makes goofy ass noises. You know, he doesn't even talk. And, you know, those guys, like, I just, you know, I appreciate that they're my friends, but I'm an obnoxious individual. It just, you know, and it's just my personality. I've never been diagnosed with ADHD, but the fire service is all I've ever done. My dad loved it, you know, as much as I loved it. I grew up going to fires with him. It, you know, my dad came to all my soccer games, and he, you know, he did the Gatorade and water and all that shit. He was there for everything. My dad was there for everything for me. But our, you know, I literally, when I was 10 years old, I'd ride the fires with him, man, pull it up on shit on fire. I mean, I've said it a bunch in this class. 1979, I was riding with him in a 1971 Volvo station wagon, blue 1971 Volvo station wagon, when I saw the first person, 40-some-year-old man, pulled out a two-story house fire, put in a body bag. And so, you know, when you're, you know, at the time, I don't know what I was, 5 years old, 6 years old, whatever I was, that's a game changer. And then I get a little older, 1985, we lost an entire family of five, just, you know, a couple miles from my house in a fire, man. It changed my dad, you know. And so I grew up, you know, just, you know, experiencing just some weird shit, some bad car wrecks on Highway 98 where I live. You know, I remember a car wreck where there's an entire family, and, you know, we pulled up and there's sheets all over the whole family. And, you know, in today's society, people would probably want to report my mom and dad, or my dad, you know, to families and children. But it was a different time in the 70s and 80s. And so, you know, I don't know if I'm answering a question, but when you grow up seeing that kind of crap and you see that stuff, and my dad was in, you know, military, Korea, Vietnam, and my mom worked at AFSOC. They were military people. My dad was enlisted, but, you know, he was a blue collar worker that was a servant type worker, leader, you know, airman, and, you know, just compassion, man. And we went to church on Sunday, Wednesday, and Saturday. I don't go 3 days a week now. You know, we're doing good to go on Sunday, but I grew up, you know, going to church a lot. And I grew up in, I won't want to call it a Southern Baptist church, but it was a Baptist church. And, you know, it's just my message. You know, I read a quote that was pretty cool. Clay McKee put it about, you know, Shannon. Shannon's one of my best friends about, you know, you should care about who likes you because you can't leave people they don't like you. And that is true. And I've had a bad habit of saying, I'm not looking for no new friends. I don't care. I do care if people like me, but I'm not going to let it dilute my message. You know what I mean? I'm not going to let it dilute my thing. I'll tell you this. I would rather you be pissed off at me and it be the truth and it set you free and you change your lifestyle than you and I hang out again, you know, because I'm not saying, you know, I need to start saying, yes, I'm looking for new friends. But I only have so much time and I have a lot of friends already. And the truth is, I love just hanging out with my wife. If you come to a conference, usually at lunch, her and I go to lunch together every single day. You know, so, and some of my best friends, I don't have time to hang out and talk to them, you know, but what's most important to me is that I impact you positively without any return. I'm going to say that again. What's most important to me is that I positively impact you, anybody listening tonight, without any return. I don't care if you come to a conference. I don't care if I get any financial gain. I don't care if I get any cycle. What's most important is that I do something, and I don't even need to know. I don't need to track it. I don't need to be told that. I just know that when I go to bed at night, that I made a difference in somebody else's life and motivated them to change the way they think. And hopefully they'll invest in themselves. So when they go to a fire, that maybe they don't turn out to be a Maurice Bartholomew, or maybe they pick somebody's life like Dina does, and they don't pull out a gun and kill themselves.
Right.
Or, you know, maybe they go to a fire and they do better at this fire than they did the last one because they actually, you know, did a post-incident critique and they were honest with each other, just like pilots are after they fly, you know?
100%. Love it. Chief, man, like I said, everybody here is saying the same. Just done. That's the truth. That's the truth. Laugh out loud. I'm obnoxious. That came from Howard Reinwald, of course, talking about your obnoxious comment. Chief, I always like to ask every guest on the scrap if they have books, and I know you do, but books that they think firefighters should read.
I mean, yeah, I mean, obviously the John Norman Fire Officer Handbook. I think everybody should get the FDTN newsletter by Jim McCormick. It, you know, I know it was $48, at $60 down, but it is the most vetted articles that come out every month. Every firefighter should be paying it's $5 a month to get the FDTN newsletter of articles where Jim is picking out the best solid engine and truck articles. That's important. I mean, I showed you the report from Engine Company 82. You know, it depends on your rank. I don't know the date. It's either April 12th and 13th or April 13th and 14th. I'm going to do another 2-day class on command and control of fires using Chief Vincent Dunn's command and control book.
Nice.
I mean, for Chief, you ought, that's a basic but solid book. Chief Dunn's strategy and tactics book, his battle space, anything Vincent Dunn, his safety and survival book. You should have all those books. You know, investing and reading them. If you're a company officer or building a company, you should have Scott Thompson's new functional fire company. You know, Jason Hovelman's book, the leadership book he has. I mean, you can write in it, take notes. And talking about Jason Hovelman, he sent me $2,000 in books he paid for him, like 450 of them. I still have some leftover ones, and I'm going to give them out of this next command and control class. But, you know, there's a lot of books out there. You know, whether it's educational or it's motivational, you know, 2000 alarms, you might have to pay $400 to get it, but, that's a great book, you know, leadership, you know, Step Up and Lead. I wasn't BSing 2 weeks ago. Step Up and Lead by Chief Vizcuso is probably right there with 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership by John Maxwell on just an easy book for a firefighter to read that will motivate you to be, you know, a better leader, if you will. But I'll say this, I'm going to finish it off. And this book, people on here, half of them probably don't even know it. It's a blue book by William Clark, and it's the Methods and Techniques. It's the strategy book by Chief William Clark, retired from New York City, went down to the Florida State Fire College. The auditorium's named after him. And it hasn't been in publication for, shit, I don't know, probably 20 years. But I think you can still get it on Amazon. It's the only book that I've ever read where it equates 50 gallons a minute per person for staffing on fire flow needs at a fire. But Chief William Clark's book, it's the methods and techniques, like a strategy and tactics book. And I would say, man, it's just an awesome book. It, you know, it's one of the few books outside of the Fire Stream Management Handbook that talked about Lloyd Lehman and Keith Roy Nelson, and just engine fire behavior, great fire behavior chapter. I mean, it's graduating beyond anything IFSTA does. So I would say anybody that's a firefighter, fire officer, chief, if you've never read that book, you got to get it, highlight it, train on it. You know, I was fortunate enough to use that book, I don't know, 25 years ago. And it's highlighted multiple colors and, you know, pinned. And, you know, I don't even know it. When I'm up on stage, just randomly running my mouth 100 miles an hour, I'm spitting out some of Chief Clark's stuff.
I love it. If anybody has a link to the FDTN Fire Department Training Network, slap it up there for the people that are watching so that they can click on it and go sign up if they so choose, because I mentioned that. Okay, Chief, every week on The Scrap, we have a thing that we do. It's called The 5 Questions for Firefighters. Grant Finley, the name of the book was Methods and Techniques, Chief. Was that it?
I never say it right. It's like strategy. Let me look it up real quick. Just give me a second.
Okay.
I'll Google it. So that way I know I'm giving the right.
No, absolutely.
It's a blue book, and I always call it something different. Principles and Practices. That's what it's called.
Principles and Practices.
Yep.
But William Clark.
I'll see if I can show it up there, like real close. The blue. Is that showing up?
Nice. Sweet.
Yep. So that's the book, man, Firefighting Principles and Practices. And, you know, they still got it. It's on here on Amazon, $59. I mean, it. You know, that book is, you know, I rank it up there with Chief Vincent Dunn's books. Solid fire behavior. I mean, that's a book that helped me 25 years ago jump on the whole, you got to be using water to need water, and intellectually trying to educate myself on water application and flow rates based on available water supply. I mean, here's the deal. For 1403, you're going to get me fired up again for a live burn. We got to calculate flow needs. I mean, well, shit, if you're a fire ground commander going to an address, you ought to have an idea of the square footage, the compartmentalization of the building, and what it requires. I mean, the military goes to war, they bring enough ammunition. I mean, shit.
Thank you, Ryan Wright and Bill Bubba Tisha Jr. for the FDTN. Thank you, Brian, for the picture. Brian Brush sent me a picture. I wanted to share my picture.
Awesome.
Okay, now mine is out of focus, but we got it. Okay, so there we go. Caught up on the books. I'm going to get him started on 1403, but I'm not going to do it right now. Five questions for firefighters. We do it every week on the weekly scrap, so I'm very excited to hit them. Chief Ike, are you ready for the 5 questions for firefighters?
Yes, and I have no clue what they are, so go ahead.
It's perfect, because the first one's a softball. It is, number one, what is the number one issue facing the modern fire service? These are all, hey, let me give you the rules real quick, which is every answer is your opinion. There is no right or wrong answers, and the points are assigned arbitrarily by me. So there we go. Number one issue facing the modern fire service, according to Chief Kurt Isaacson.
Man, I wish I could read it. Like, it would probably be the quote off of the back of the Elkhart Brass t-shirt that Jerry and Stretch did. Like, where we're starving for information, but I can't remember exactly how.
Brush will pop it up here. Is drowning in information, starving for wisdom, or something along those lines, right?
Yes, that's it. I mean, that's it, man, just to keep me from rambling for 10 minutes. That's it. You know, and just for people that don't understand, is there's so much shit on social media, and some of it's good, some of it's not. Everybody wants an opinion. Everybody wants to be, you know, everybody wants to be the next Tom Brennan, man. And I'm sorry if you're running out of time, but I got to say this.
You're good. There's no time limit except yours.
People got to stop trying to be something they can't be. If there's one thing I do, I keep myself in my lane. Since I've been doing these conferences, I try to bring in names bigger than me. I try to give them more time on the stage than me. This isn't about me, even though it's my conference. And I'll get people sometimes complain like, well, hey, we came here with they're going to hear. Well, shit, man. I'll probably be around when these guys aren't. Not to be rude, but they're 20 years older than me. They're going to retire. And so my message to everybody listening is, man, stay in your lane. Be patient. Wait. Yes, keep reading, keep training, keep educating. But stop trying to force shit down. I've actually backed off some on social media. Like, you know, if you want to come to my class, I'll teach you. But I mean, you know, shit, man. I mean, I'm getting worried today that Chief John Norman won't teach. I mean, he couldn't come because of COVID. I mean, and I don't want to use any other names like I'm offending somebody calling him old. But I mean, I've been worried for 10 years on some of my top mentors the last day they're going to teach a lecture. And, you know, so, you know, the number one thing facing the American Fire Service is an overabundance of information that's not vetted. And I'll give you the solution to the number one answer. Get FDTN newsletter, $5 a month. You get a magazine that has no advertisements in it, and it's going to have 3, 4, 5, 6 articles that came out of a bunch of other publications that is vetted by Jim McCormack, his instructors, and it's legit. You're not reading some goofy-ass theory that's not going to work on a fire line.
Right. Someone who'd never even seen the interior. I love it. I love it. You got me talking. So that means that you get, well, anybody gets me talking on an answer gets max points. So it's a great answer on number one. Number two is, what is the thing you are most excited about for the future of firefighting? I like it when you don't have a preemptive time to think about it. Go ahead.
You know, I think the excitement of everybody finally getting over the turf wars of UL, interior, exterior attack, and us all coming to a common, you know, agreement. People early on like thought Ray was against it, and he wasn't. I mean, he's smarter than anybody that's probably even watching tonight intellectually. You know, it's just time. It takes time to vet it, man. I got to steal Ray's thing. Like Ray said, when a new iPhone came out, he ain't getting a new iPhone. He's going to let everybody else get it and figure out if the damn thing works or not. And then he'll get it. And so I'm most excited about putting the UL studies to work. I'm most excited about truly taking the science, truly understanding it, getting through the weeds of it, bringing all the studies. You know, they're doing the search study now, putting it with the coordinated attack study of when to vent, when not to vent, on top of the interior, exterior attack study, and just being patient, man. Everybody jumped off the ship about the exterior, myself included, about the exterior attack, and man, everything, all water's got to be from the exterior, and oh shit, then the interior attack study came along. Well, man, we got to be inside the building, and we got to be using a straight stream, and you know, I'm most excited about when all these UL studies are done, us vetting them and putting the science to work on the street in an aggressive manner that brings its worth the risk to the table.
Nice. Chief, I could listen to you talk about this. I wish I had more than 5 questions. Okay, number 3, what is the best rank or position to have in the fire service? 100% your opinion.
A firefighter on a nozzle. I mean, there's nothing better than that. I mean, it's just like to be a firefighter on a nozzle is better than forcing a door. I mean, at a real fire in a real building that's on fire, you know, it's better than forcing a door, cutting a roof. And I did more time on a truck and, you know, shit, hell, I might have cut more roofs than I did on, I don't know, you know, on a nozzle. But there's nothing better than being on a nozzle. Everybody lies to you, man. If you pulled up on a building and you got to go inside and there were 7 rooms of fire and you could be on the nozzle or you could just force the door, you're an idiot to force the door over putting out 7 rooms of fire with a nozzle, especially if it's a 7/8. I mean, that's it on the nozzle. You know, a firefighter on a nozzle. That's what this job's about. Firefighters doing firefighter shit.
Well, the answer is completely your opinion. Here's the deal. The correct answer is company officer, and that's what gets max points. But the passion and the prop. And, yeah, so you get max points. The first time I think anybody's ever got max points for saying back step firefighter. But we'll move on.
You know what? Company officer is just the standard of what everybody said. I mean, everybody says. But, you know, if you look back in your career, most of the time, if you worked for a good company officer in chief, your most enjoyable time was being a firefighter. I think people lie when they don't say that. My most enjoyable time, 239 North Spring Street, Pensacola Fire Department, man. Working on a 1971 Chieftain American LaFrance 100-foot aerial or a 1977 open cab American LaFrance laying double A's at 2.5, going to 100-year-old wood frame houses. It'll never get better than that. That was the best.
I can't argue. That's why. Hey, that's the first time I think I've ever given max points for a non-company officer answer. So congratulations, sir. Number four, the best advice you ever received. You have a lot of mentors to go through here.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff, man. It doesn't mean I listen to it. And I don't do it either. My dad told me a long time ago, think before you speak. And that's because I'm obnoxious. So people probably get a kick out of that one. You know, I've had a lot of advice, man. And, you know, I could tell you an hour and I'd get emotional. I've been blessed. Anybody that knows me, if you wrote down the list of who my friends are, my mentors, the people that have given me direction, people that have built my career, it's legends of legends of legends. And, you know, the toughest question anybody asks me is, how are you friends with this guy or how are you friends with that guy? And I say, because they decided, not me. I don't decide to be friends with people like that. And so I really can't say, you know, I'll leave it at that. My dad told me, think before you speak, a lot when I was a kid, because I've always been, you know, boisterous, loud, and get in trouble at school for, you know, I used to get written up at school for talking in class. I know it's hard to believe, but, you know, think before you speak. You know, and I'll leave you with this. Everybody that's listening, one of my top goals for 2021 is emotional intelligence. And my buddy Jake Noah, he's my IT guy, he's a battalion chief of Midway. Him and I had a long conversation, and there's a book he read that I'm going to read. But I'm going to forever – I've never really been a priority of mine, but I'm going to make it a priority in 2021 to work on my emotional intelligence. Nice. And I really think – you know, and I thought about it a lot when Frank Vizguso was teaching – during ODP, because I sit in the classes too, is I think really to achieve your ultimate potential, you have to learn within your own realm emotional intelligence, you know? And that's probably one of my biggest weaknesses, man. I just say what I think. I mean, you know, so I don't mean to get off sidetrack of your questions, but think before you speak, you know, and you know, basically without saying it, my dad was basically telling me, learn to have some emotional intelligence.
Nice, nice, very nice. Perfect answer for coming from, especially to get the insight that you might have got written up in school for talking. So, number five, final question, and it is heavy fire and searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
That's a simple question. I mean, I could say, I remember I actually watched when Howard did this, and Howard talked about what I believe in, about taking a line through a window and doing all that. But I'm not going to say that. Howard said that. And that's something the American Fire Service has got to start teaching
right on in
their VES class. Two things. I got to tell this because it's about
training.
And this is an honor of Skylar, a girl that my daughter played softball with, died on the third floor of a house just a few miles from my house. She died on the third floor, 14 years old. And because of that, I share this when I go around the country, is we got to stop just doing first floor VES with a little one-year-old baby doll. We got to practice second and third floor VES using ground ladders, using full-size rescue mannequins or, you know, people, if you will, because that's going to be the high probability that they could be trapped on a second or a third floor and it ain't the little kid every time. But I'm going to take the hose line because I'm an engine company operations guy. I believe that water creates and maintains survivable space. And a majority of the fire service, we don't have the ability to read the building or the staffing within John Norman's first chapter of his book, talking about enough people to do one or another.
Right.
And so I say that 99% of the time, if you go to every fire and you rapidly stretch and apply copious amounts of water, you will create and maintain survivable space, both for the track occupant and the firefighter that's going to go in to confirm that the building's vacant. So I'll be on the hose line to create and maintain survivable space.
Love it. And you get max points because the use of the word copious. So
yes,
perfect, Chief. There it is. The answers to the five questions for firefighters, according to Chief Kurt Isaacson. So thank you for doing it with us, sir.
Awesome. It was a great time. I appreciate it. I thank everybody giving up their night to listen, and hopefully I gave you a nugget or two or motivated you, and hope to see you at a CFT fire conference in the future. The shuttle will be waiting outside of baggage claim 3 at the Pensacola airport to give you a free ride.
Awesome. I'm going to wrap it up here. Then I'm going to get with Silas, and I'm going to keep on broadcasting and do the Google wheel of names. So I'm getting ready to take a whole bunch of names and type them in. So if you're willing to stick around for it, Silas, just start talking to me here. Chief, amazing time. Thank you so much for taking your evening and rescheduling with me and coming on. It was enjoyable, sir.
Awesome. Thank you for the opportunity. I really feel appreciative that you asked me. Have a great night, everybody.
Everybody live, thanks for watching. Thanks for the questions. I hope the tone stays silent unless it's burning. Stay safe out there. Thank you, Chief.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.